This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.
Power on. Power on.
It's time to take your place on the starting grid and get ready for Racer Radio. Your host, Dave Stahl, about to take you for a white-knuckled lap around the motorsports industry, covering everything from top-notch national drivers and crew chiefs right down to your local kid racers and racetracks. Watch for the apex, because here comes Racer Radio with Dave Stahl.
Welcome to Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
This segment's brought to you by House Sponsor. Southwest Point of Sale. What am I thinking about? You got a liquor store, grocery store. Maybe you're looking to just drop it down into doing like one cashier or having no cashiers. Well, Southwest Point of Sale can make that happen. 800-540-2149. They'll come out, take a look at your business, and if it works, they'll bring their equipment out. And it won't cost you any more than you'd have paid for a cash register. Plus, you get all the equipment necessary, plus 24-hour day service. Call them, 800-540-2149. Tell them thanks for sponsoring Racer Radio. And Black Forest Motorsports, if you have a Mini Cooper, BMW, or a Porsche, you're looking for a dealer alternative, over 40 years experience, blackforestautomotive.com. Check them out. Well, we got the kid in the house.
Hi, David.
How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
No,
how are
you're
you?
Not. You're
I
exhausted.
Am.
You're tired. You want to go to bed.
I'm also fantastic.
Well, you're always fantastic. So who'd you bring in today?
Oh, my goodness. So a warning to the listeners. You know how Dave and I can talk like horsepower, bacon, and music in one conversation?
That's right.
I think that's how today is going to go with our guest. Mm. He can talk anything from motorcycles to skateboarding, obesity to amputation. He is a very competitive young man, an inspiration to many, and it's sprinkled with a wicked sense of humor from what I've gotten to know. Please welcome Michael Lewis, minus one.
Thank you.
Yeah,
hey,
come
Michael.
Closer
yeah, you
to
gotta,
the
yeah,
mic. You have a lot to share.
Yeah, pull that thing over there.
Okay. Yes. Hey, by the way, David, I was following our guest on Facebook for a couple of years, and when I was out at Barona Oaks for the MX
reunion.
Yeah.
Barona Oaks reunion.
Yeah. Well, I was out at the track. And the VMX, and I was walking the pits, and I saw you, and I was like, well, that's got to be him, and just walk right up to you, and you had like a race to get to, but still gave me time for a nice conversation, so we had to have you in for more. David, are you going to join us?
I am totally listening. No, I'm listening. I'm answering a car question.
A car question. So thank you for your time. You made quite an impression. So I was like, we got to bring you in. How'd that race go? I know you've raced a bunch since. Do you remember that day?
I do.
Out there with Scott Burnworth.
I did.
In his event.
Scott put on a great race.
And yeah.
The track was fantastic. But the biggest enjoyment for me was the people, because mm-hmm. there was like 1,000 guys there that many of them were old racers.
Oh yeah, I met a lot of people that day.
And not being at their level for mm-hmm. me, it was like, you know, these are guys I've watched race for years and years mm-hmm. and years and years and years, and here I got to get out on the track with them. And then we were there for 3 days, so we got to spend some time you know, hearing about the history of Barona and some of their histories and their interaction with each other. So, you know, it's a serious brotherhood.
You want them closer to the mic? Oh. While we're adjusting the mic, for our listeners, would you mind giving a little history? Because you started way back with Speedway, right? Oh, wait, or Flat Track? Oh, geez.
What, down at 117, Highway 117?
No, I started in 1963 riding in the desert.
He was only 8.
I was. I started riding in the desert, and then we started riding, you know, the scrambles and TT tracks and all of that.
That's what you wanted to do professionally, right?
Right. I wanted to be the Grand National Motorcycle Racing Champion. You know, back then it was, you know, Gary Nixon and Burt Lawa, Art Markle, and then Kenny Roberts, and ultimately Dave Aldana and Gene Romero, those kind of guys.
Keep going. Yeah.
Idols. Yeah, my idols too. And fortunately, I got to meet some of them.
Yeah.
And so I started racing flat track and TT And my mom remarried. Actually, I got involved in motorcycles because my parents divorced when I was very young, and I was five. And when I was eight, my stepdad said, "Hey, if you start towing the line, I'll buy you a motorcycle."
Awesome.
So all of a sudden, I was paying attention to school. You know,
I was doing the things I needed to do. Yeah. You know?
So
little carrot.
So where we heard this story.
Yeah,
before.
That's yeah. So great.
So he got me a little Yamaha 80. That was a street bike.
Sure.
And it was a YG1, and we ended up with a hacksaw cutting everything off of it that you didn't need.
Really. Oh, okay, yeah.
And it had about 2 to 2.5 inches of travel, and I'm racing.
Oh, so much?
I was riding that in the desert against the Honda S90s, and you know, and then the Hodakas came out, and of course I hated Hodaka riders because you know they had suspension, they had faster bikes, and they were more reliable, but. So that's what I started.
How could you say a Hodaka is reliable?
More reliable.
Compared to what I was riding, it was.
In all of perspective.
I always tell this story. I always try to deal with the Cal VMX guys. And a guy had a Bull Taco, you know, down at the station. It's like, oh, wow, man, that's a nice looking Bull Taco. Is it a real deal? He goes, oh, yeah. I said, how's it start? Starts great. I said, well, it can't be a Bull Taco. Right? Those things never started until you got them started, and they were awesome.
Yeah, then they ran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, the stories, you know, because you've been racing, geez. But all professional or just for fun?
No. I was young, so I started racing like the flat tracks, and then my stepdad got transferred back to Washington, D.C. He was with the American Satellite Corporation. Actually, he was with ComSat Communications back then, but... He got transferred back there, and flat track was real big back there.
Big.
Half mile, quarter mile, mile oval. So we started to race back there. And when I was 12 years old, I said, hey, you know, I want a new bike. My dad says, great, go buy one. You know? And he said, if you want one, go buy one.
Yeah.
You know? And so he ultimately got me a job at a motorcycle shop.
Perfect.
So you could afford to buy one.
At 12. So I cleaned toilets for $1 an hour.
Do you still do that? Your wife wants to know.
No, I wipe the seat off. I wipe the seat off. Okay.
That's a start.
He has very good aim.
Put the seat up. Okay, sorry.
I did. Well, it depends if I had anything to drink, because then the aim's not as good. So I went to work at a place called Cycles Incorporated, which ultimately became the second largest motorcycle dealership in the nation.
Where at?
4219 Wilson Boulevard.
Oh, he probably knows the phone number, too.
No, I didn't mean
to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no.
And where's this located?
Well, it's not there anymore. Now it's called Coleman Motorsports, and I think
it's
all online.
Dad,
I think it's all online.
But I mean, is it in San Diego?
No. It was in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Because a lot of... Yeah, you're making the old guys get a headache.
Yeah,
trying to remember. I don't remember seeing that on Elk Grove Boulevard.
Moved.
Yeah, so I start working there, and then I was able
to pick your dog up. He's having a heart attack.
He's having a good time. Ollie's with me. For you guys that know Ollie,
if you're into dachshunds,
we have a little kitty in here.
So when I was 16, I was doing really well. I was able to race a couple of pro races. Got third place in my first two pro races, and then. I won 9 out of 11 races, and the 11th race, I took a foot peg through my right leg at about 80 miles an hour.
Oh. Why?
And they I was attached to the bike, so they had to take
They
had to take the peg off the pegs off the bike, and they were a solid piece. It went all the way underneath.
Right.
They transported me from Winchester, Virginia. The racetrack's still there. It's called Winchester Speedway. They transferred me. It was a mile, and they transferred me from there to the hospital. And I had the expansion chamber stuck to the back of my leg. So that burnt all the way through the meat.
Sure.
The peg was still in me.
Right.
And they took me to the hospital. I don't remember a lot other than screaming all the way, to the hospital.
Oh, gosh.
And then they took the peg out, or the peg...
Came out.
They took it all out. And I remember looking at my leg, and it was like turned around backwards. Mm. And
did you regret looking?
No.
Nah,
no.
You got it.
I kept saying, get me back for the final.
Attaboy.
No, I really did.
I believe it.
I thought I was going to be back in time, because I was racing two classes that day, and I said, get me back for the final.
Done.
I said, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah. You know?
So, is this when they took the leg?
Well, no, they set it. They removed the peg, and they set it, and like 3 days later, I woke up in the hospital, and I remember the doctor asking me, can you move your toes? And I looked down, they're all blue. I said, no, I don't even feel my toes. So the next thing I know, they're loading me in a helicopter, and it was one of those ones that's like the little bubble front.
That, yeah.
You know, because this is in 1972.
Welcome to MASH 4077.
Yeah. So, and the thing is, they don't put you inside. They put you underneath. So you're on a gurney strapped to the underneath side of this helicopter.
To the belly of the copter.
Yeah. So they lift up, and I'm looking around thinking, oh, this is scary.
Did they forget about me?
And they took me to Baltimore, Maryland, University Hospital, and that's where they amputated the leg.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And how old were you then?
I was 16.
Wow. So let's finish up that story because Dirt Dude's not calling in.
Correct.
So we'll be right back on Racer Radio to finish up the Michael Lewis minus one story right here on Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks, welcome back. You're listening to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
This segment is brought to you by El Cajon Ford, where nobody, absolutely nobody, treats you better than El Cajon Ford. Inventory is starting to creep in. Used cars are starting to build up. Need a vehicle? Check them out. ElCajonMotors.com. Service department will work on every single car in your garage. You can't ask for anything better than that. Check them out right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. Hey, Brittany. How are you doing, kiddo?
I'm well. I have a listener already asking, why isn't Dirt Dude calling in? That just so you know, he has obligations, family obligations, but said he will gladly call in with results next week.
He has a fan.
Yeah. And I just don't want the listeners, the racers, the crews to think we forgot about you. We know that a lot of you raced your little hearts out last night. You have not been forgotten. In fact, he said he would gladly call in with results next week.
Okay, and we'll just
I'm cool with
up.
That. Yeah, because we have such an awesome guest in today. This
so we left with Mike Lewis at the age of 16.
And a helicopter, strapped to the belly of a helicopter.
Involved in a motorcycle accident, impaled his, which leg?
Right leg.
And unfortunately, due to probably the length of going from the racetrack to the hospital and all of that, you lost the leg.
Well, I developed what's called gangrene.
Right.
Gaseous gangrene. And they, at the time, told me they didn't know if that
was a dirty, must have been a dirty track.
It was a dirt track, and I was a little dirty.
Yeah. But and it took a while, I'm sure, to get you from point A to point B.
You know, I don't know exactly whether it was the lack of fresh oxygen or the lack of fresh blood, but they did put me in a decompression chamber with the legs, you know, flayed open for a few days trying to kill the infection.
So you basically 16 and you're what, 22 now? So, you know, you've had to go a few years
this is
like
radio,
this.
You can say that.
But you've adapted.
Well,
And then some.
I'm what's called a RACA, which is a right above the knee amputee.
Right.
So RACA.
Okay.
So I have the residual leg that for me is very short.
The thigh.
Right. So the longer that is, the easier it is to adapt when it's really short. And then there's those that, you know, don't really have any residual leg.
Right.
And then that's really tough on them, you know. So for me, it wasn't as difficult as this for many. But when I left the hospital, you know, I had already decided, even though the doctor said, you're never going to walk again, you know, you're never going to do this. Because I kept saying, hey, hurry up and get me out so I can race.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
I was still 16 between the years.
Yeah.
Sure. You know what I mean?
Probably a good thing.
And still wanting to race. So
I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did go back and race three times, and you know, my sponsors disappeared, you know, because back in 1972 it's like nobody even wanted a one-legged guy that lost his leg on a motorcycle at the motorcycle track, let alone out on the track.
And there were no prosthesis technology back then that would accommodate what you wanted to do.
No the legs back then were solid fiberglass, you know,
and it was for walking and maybe driving a car, maybe.
Yeah, above the knee was back then, you know,
it was tough.
Yeah, they expected you to stay in either in a wheelchair or even use crutches when you walked with the leg.
Right.
Did you finally find an advocate, or was it just you, like, pushing forward?
No. My family and my friends were super supportive of me, but by the time we all realized that I didn't have any business racing back then, you know, my stepdad just sold all the motorcycles, and it's like, now motorcycles are gone. But I still worked at the motorcycle shop, so I bought another one.
Unbeknownst.
Because Rickman came out with what was called the Rickman Zundapp, and it had the you know, nobody had kickstart, electric starts back there, except the Yamaha AT1, and that wasn't competitive. So I bought a Zundapp, which had a kickstart and a gear shift on the left.
On the left side.
Right. So I tried doing an enduro and a motocross on that, and it just wasn't for me. You know, I still rode, and I've ridden ever since.
But not with a prosthetic leg, because I had
no control over it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have control over the knee. Now they have them that, $100,000 legs that, of course, you can probably.
So did that end your race career?
Yeah, that ended my
professional race career.
That ended my race career.
Did you stay in the industry?
No, I actually went to work for a company that was making motocross handlebars, the number plate, the grips, the number and zip ties on like a shrink wrap for bicycles, for BMX.
Oh, okay.
So we would sell those all over the country, these bicycle, because, that bicycle motocross was just coming into its own. But everybody had like the little Stingray or whatever, and then they put these kits on there, and they had a motocross bike.
Sure.
So we started selling those, and then they invented the urethane wheel.
I hear skateboarding coming in. Okay, skateboarding's right around the corner here.
So my boss said, hey, I know where to get these urethane wheels. We can silkscreen them and put the name of our company on there, and we can sell them. Now, they were loose ball bearing back then, so there was 8 ball bearings in every wheel, and we'd put them in there. And so we started making skateboards. Actually, we didn't. We did business with Ralph Barnes Plastic, and they made the wheels.
So you just did the trucks.
We assembled them, and we put our names on them. We put the grip tape, and then we sold the completed units.
Gotcha.
Well, we ended up getting the 7-Eleven store account.
So we
got an order
on every street corner
first we were selling like 100 a month, and then all of a sudden we're selling 100,000 a month.
Wow, yes.
But the deal was that we had a 1,000-square-foot shop. So we moved to a 10,000-square-foot shop over in Westminster.
And started hiring people.
And because I was the number 3 in the company, they said, okay, you're in charge of shipping, you're in charge of manufacturing and all of that. Well, walking on crutches from the front to the back, my office to the back, 50 times a day was too much.
Tell me you started riding.
So I put a skateboard on the ground, and I'd use my crutches to propel myself. So every day I'd go back and forth, and then pretty soon
got pretty good at it.
Well, during breaks and lunch, we started racing around pallets, and it got to the point where nobody could beat me because I just put my crutch out in front of him, and they go flying over the front of the skateboard.
Whatever it took.
It's roller dirt. That was roller derby
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Trying.
Yeah, so try to pass me. What I mean? You're going to get a crutch in the crutch.
The crutch in the crutch.
I'm surprised he didn't earn other names.
It worked every time. So
it worked every time.
Anyway, we started doing trade shows where we'd show, we'd feature our product. And our product got a little bit better and a little better. And we did the Orange County Fairgrounds. They had a big, huge skateboard competition, and you could sell all your components. So while we were there, my boss, his name was Donald Bunker, and he said, you need to enter the skateboard competition. I'm watching these guys, and you can do everything they're doing.
That's awesome. Around the office.
He says.
Yeah, you've been doing it.
Yeah, he says they got freestyle, they got slalom, and they got cross country. I'll pay the entry fee. It was like $3.
And how old are we right now?
17 or 18.
Okay, so you're game for anything.
Yeah, I'm still 16 between the years, remember? So I said, sure, I'll do it. So he signs me up for all 3 events. Well, I start watching these guys doing freestyle. It's like, I've never done a trick on a skateboard in my life, So I went behind the building. I watched a couple of guys,
behind a building right before the competition.
At the fairgrounds.
I'm loving this.
On asphalt. And so I come back out, and they call my name. I end up getting 8th place.
Okay.
And I found out later it was the world championship.
Oh my gosh.
And I was skating against Tom Sims, Stacy Peralta, Jay Adams, all of these big names. But, they felt sorry for, this guy with one leg gets up there and he competes. And, I think that was a gimme, just to give me the 8th place. But it didn't matter because I came away with a big head.
Oh, goodness.
And so that was kind of the beginning of my skateboard deal. From that moment on, I started skateboarding every day. Every single day. And practiced. I started practicing under the Huntington Beach Pier for years. And there was a restaurant up above. There was a couple of different ones, but Maxwell's and Captain Hook. And they would give me free dinners.
Nice.
Because everybody would sit out on the balcony and watch me skateboard. Well, I met other skateboarders there.
Yeah.
Ed Nadlin, Russ Howell, some of the biggest names in skateboarding. And then also a woman named Gail Webb.
I was wondering, yes.
Named Gail. And so,
listeners will be meeting her in a month or so.
Yeah, so we became, friends. And then I started getting invited to tournaments. Mm-hmm. And somebody named Hobie Alter contacted me and said, I'd like you to skate for me.
Really?
So I started skating for Hobie.
Right on.
And then they had a Northern California Skateboard Championships. And all the big names were going to be there. And this was my first really big championship. And the day that they had that tournament, they announced they were having a pro division. So all the really big names turned pro. Because they wanted the $500 or $1,000 bucks or whatever. Yeah. Well, I didn't.
Yes?
I stayed in the amateur
division.
So
he was kind of a sandbagger, but...
No, I was. So, I mean, I knew I couldn't compete with those guys. Yeah. Even though one-footed tricks paid twice the points.
You know,
one-footed tricks.
Oh.
Yeah, they do.
You still used your crutches, right?
Sure, to propel myself.
Did the competition consider that a disadvantage
or an advantage
for them or an advantage?
You know, I couldn't tell you what they were thinking.
Right.
But they never said anything. Otherwise,
they didn't. And
they were probably just impressed.
Back then, I went through so many crutch tips that I started putting urethane wheels on the bottom of my crutches. So, and we got them free. So,
yeah, what the heck?
So I used, urethane wheels as crutch tips. But we did the eliminations, we did the finals, and I'm thinking, hey, I'm hoping I get on the podium.
Yes. You know?
So they announced third place, and it's this guy named Rick Lugo. And I said, oh, that's it. I'm not getting a spot. And then the second place guy. And then I'm thinking, I'm done, So then they said the winner of, this year's Northern California State Freestyle Skateboard Championship is... And they call my name, and I'm
and you're walking out the door.
No, and I'm a little nervous, And I go up there. I drop my crutches.
Oh, my
gosh,
he's fumbling.
I hop up on top of the podium, on the very top. When they hand me this 6-foot-tall trophy, and I fall over
because
it's too heavy. Oh. I can't, I'm trying to balance over the front of the podium.
Did you break it?
So no, but they had to lift me up and then hold it for me because I couldn't balance up there and hold it.
Made it quite memorable.
Oh, my God. But what an inspiration for people that have amputees to think once they lose a limb, they're done.
You are at the tip of the iceberg with our conversation we had
earlier. Seriously, the tip of the iceberg.
Yes.
Okay, unfortunately, we have to take a break.
We have one more segment at
least.
Yes,
we do.
The fourth segment.
We will hear more from Mike Lewis minus one right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The answer.
All right, folks, welcome back to Razor Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The answer.
Brittany wants a 12-hour Razor Radio show. I don't know how I'm going to pull it off, but we'll see what happens.
Go find some more sponsors. I bring in good guests.
I love it.
I can't help
myself. Go find some more sponsors.
Just
Paris
like that.
Auto Speedway sponsors this segment, and Scott's not going to let it go. I don't care what you say to him, because that is one awesome track.
Yes,
half mile clay that's up in Paris and just right there at the fairgrounds, and they put on a show probably better than most in Southern California, but they don't care. All they want to do is make you race fans happy and come out for a Class A show and an unbelievable announcer, and that would be Mr. Scott Delosio. How you doing, bud?
Doing good. How are you guys doing today?
Well, great.
We got a guy in here that raced what you love, and that's Speedway bikes. Or Speedway or no?
Flat track.
His name's Mike Lewis minus one because he had a leg removed while doing that. But he stayed within it, then went skateboarding. So I figured you'd get a kick out of that.
That's cool. I've been listening to the show. We actually had a guy in Speedway when I first got involved in the sport back in 1980 by the name of David DeTemple, who had his right leg amputated below the knee.
Yeah.
And he was a top rider. I mean, you talk scratch riders, that's a pinnacle of sport here in the U.S.
Sure.
And David DeTemple was a scratch rider, probably ranked in the top 12,
Wow.
Really good. And there was, if you follow sprint car racing, Tony the Tiger Simon out here, he crashed, I forget where the crash was, before I moved out here, just before, and he lost one of his arms.
Mm.
First race back in a sprint car, he won the main event.
Wow. I think it's all inspirational. I really, really do. I think when, you know, adversity, you know, smacks you in the face, you have two choices. You can go sit and just sulk, or you can make something of it and make an impact. And I think that's
yes, you
pretty
have
much
a quote about sitting on a couch, Michael.
Well, you know, I just believe that nobody's going to live this life but you. So I set my own limits in life. And if, you know, there's three types of people the way I look at it. There's those that make things happen. There's those that watch things happen. And then there's those that wonder just what happened.
Right.
Exactly. Wonder what happened.
I like that. So what's kicking, brother? You got some big event coming up? I'll betcha.
Yeah, well, we do. You know, we've been off. Actually, we took a summer break this year. This will be the first time this coming Saturday, I should say. Be the first time we've had racing since July 2nd. So we've been off for 6 weeks.
Wow.
That's a long time for you guys. You know,
yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's probably, when you think about Arizona, you know, those tracks, they basically close July, August into September. Mm. The track I sometimes go up to, which you've had the promoter on before, Mojave Valley, they close like May until September because it just
for
gets
good
too
reason.
Hot.
Yeah.
Dude, I just came through there on Saturday and it was 115. Nobody races at 115 degrees.
Who wants to go out in that?
Not me. I was
wear
glad.
A suit, sit behind a motor that's running at 180 degrees.
So you're coming back this coming Saturday?
Yeah, this coming Saturday, and we will. This is the second half of the season opener, Night of Destruction.
Yes,
our most popular show right now.
I'm looking for pictures right now to show you, Lewis.
It's the most popular show we have right now, and we're going to keep going strong through November. You know, the first part of November. So it's the next 3 months. It's full throttle once again.
Yeah.
So with half season,
it's been nice to have the 6 weeks off. Believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure. But isn't it? Are you a tad surprised that it's so popular?
No.
Night of Destruction.
No. I'm not. No, I know you're not asking me, but I'm not surprised.
Not
you haven't seen it, Dave. You haven't been there in person.
I have, too.
When?
I've been there more times than you care to it. No, I'm not. I've been there.
If one sees it in person, you would not be surprised.
Right. I've been there.
It's like that across the country. You know, I've talked to promoters. I know Lawrenceburg Speedway in Indiana, their biggest crowds, Night of Destruction. The racetrack I grew up at, Flat Rock Speedway in Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, I see the videos from there lately, and their crowds are way, way down. They run, their Night of Destruction is a little bit different because they run figure eight races with the regular shows all the time. But they bring in school bus figure eight, and Kenny Schrader drives in that a lot.
I know.
When they do that, the place is packed.
I know.
So it's, you know, it's a different deal. You bring somebody to a 410 sprint car race who's maybe not into racing, and they're just not going to get it. You know, if they're a motorhead, they're probably going to figure out and like it. But you can take anybody off the street and put a bunch of crazy people out there wrecking cars. You know, with our deal, we combine it. It's racing and wrecking, so it's not just wrecking cars.
Right.
You know, so they can cheer for the guy trying to get to the finish line versus what we do. But everybody understands that. There's nothing super hard to understand when you do that. And it's a good show. I mean, we're normally out of there by 9:30 at night. So people can come in, their kids don't get bored. They come out early, they can meet all the drivers on the racetrack for like a half hour, 45 minutes. That's the most important thing, is entertaining the kids. Because if a kid doesn't like what he's seeing, he's not going to ask mom and dad to take him the next time.
Right.
And then again, the kid is not. You know, the parents aren't going to want to take the kid if he doesn't want to go. They'll find something else to do that the kid can enjoy.
Well, and you know as well as I do that with the safety requirements that you instill in Night of Destruction, the good part about it is people love to see crashes. I don't care. Just go down the freeway, wait till there's a fender bender, and everybody's got to look.
Oh, my gosh.
But if you go to a racetrack and it's organized and it's just mayhem, double stacked in cars, buses, you know, trailer. You know, as long as they know everybody's going to walk away, then it is the most fun you could ever have.
I agree. You know, when Don brought in those double deckers a couple of years ago, that just took it to another level.
Yes.
People probably can relate to seeing cars stacked on top of each other with one guy steering and one guy controlling the throttle and the brakes. But it's so crazy, you know, that it's fun.
Well, and you guys just don't stack two cars on top. You put the top car on backwards, or you put the car forward. Like, I think there's a PT Cruiser.
That's what I just showed our guest.
That just mounts on top of a car backwards, so the driver's looking out the back window, but has minimal control. But the fans just love it.
He has a lot of control because he controls the steering wheel.
Yeah, but he doesn't control the gas pedal or the brake.
No, that's the guy down below. It's a 50-50 deal. The guy or the gal down below, it's a 50-50 deal. You know, they have to depend on each other. And the only communication
is screaming.
Post communication is screaming. We found one guy turned upside down last year when he got out of the car. He left the radio inside.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, yeah, that's not good. Because
it is a family sport.
Yeah.
So you're going to have the double deckers. You're going to have, what else are you going to have?
The mini stocks, which, by the way, and I'll confirm this later, if you got Jeff Dyer's been on your show several times.
Yeah.
The sprint car driver, and his son was now racing lightning sprints. He bought a car for his wife to run in Night of Destruction this year in the mini stocks. And she hasn't raced it yet, except she took it up to Mojave Valley and raced an oval race. Well, apparently she doesn't want to race it. So Jeff figures if she doesn't want to race it, he's put it up for sale. Nobody's bought it. He's just come out there and wreck it on Saturday night. So that would be the first sprint car driver we've had running Night of Destruction. I mean,
I bet he does well.
How's that for career advancement?
Wow. Send me a text. Brittany will buy it.
That I know, right? That's the one I love.
Because that's the one you've been talking about.
I know. Still in me, now that desire. And this is all this coming Saturday?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, we get done with that. I know you talked to Chris Holt a couple weeks ago. The annual race, the California Racers Hall of Fame night's coming up. Right now, I think it's at $1,000 for the fast qualifier that night. There's going to be a trophy dash. We do this trophy dash. You know, I suggested a few years ago to Don, it's like, it's not a regular trophy dash. You know, four cars, three laps. Let's do it like speedway motorcycle racing.
Yeah.
Fast four qualifiers. Each car starts off each starting position one time. They get points where they finish. And at the end of the fourth race, the guy with the most points wins. Well, that's 12 laps. That's going to pay $2,000 to the winner. And then Chris, through all his connections, lap money is over $5,000.
Wow.
The guy could take home, we were penciling it together a few weeks ago, a guy who swept the show could take home over $11,000.
Holy mackerel. That is amazing. Well, I'm telling you, folks, next Saturday, mark your calendar. Scott's taking care.
2 weeks from Saturday.
Oh, 2 weeks?
Night of Destruction next week.
Sprint cars in 2 weeks.
Sprint car
the five. Okay, I got you.
And then we wrap up the month with stock cars, IMCA and Pascar stock cars.
Right.
On the 27th.
That is sounds.
Back to back to back.
Hey, have you ever heard of a gas station called Bucky's?
No, but I've heard of Sinclair, which I never. There's one up the street from me in Detroit, and I was working in Bakersfield last year, and they're all over up in that area.
I drove cross country last week bringing a vehicle back for a friend, and everybody I've ever talked to, you got to stop at Bucky's. You got to stop at Bucky's. So I've got a T-shirt. And
yep,
I've got a car shirt, and it's a little beaver, and it's the cleanest.
With a party hat on.
It's the cleanest place I've ever been to. But I figured you, of all people, might have known what it was.
No, I never heard of it.
I can't find anybody.
I've been out here for a lot of years now.
So. Too many.
I don't know. Well, maybe the last few years it might be too many. let's not go to politics, but we can't.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Well, yeah.
No. So
You said Bucky, and just think about the governor, okay?
Yeah, there you go. I love you. Hey, so still buy tickets online?
Yeah, you can buy tickets online. It's TIX.com.
Okay.
Or you go to our website, and nobody will have a pencil out right now. They can find the phone number on our website. But if people don't want to buy tickets, we have plenty of advanced tickets. We have plenty of tickets available for everybody when they get to the racetrack every single night.
Lots of seating.
Yeah, tons.
Lots of bathroom stalls.
Yeah. Clean.
Very nice.
Nice bar. Good
they
burgers.
They have sangria.
Yeah, good food. Well, we know where you're going.
It's a fun night. I bet the weather's amazing by race time.
Yeah, because once the sun goes down, it really cools off, right?
Yeah, we're on the edge of the desert. You know, actually, most days there's a breeze comes through there till like about 6 o'clock.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
you know, and it can be a warm breeze right now, obviously, but we're on the edge of the desert. So once it goes down, it does usually cool off really nice.
And I love the fact that when they built that track, they pointed the fans to the east so they don't get blasted in the eyes with sun.
When you think of a lot of stuff there, you know, the lights
for
the front straightaway are behind the grandstands.
Yeah, which is awesome.
The lights for the back straightaway and the turns are in the infield. So the fans do not have sun in their eyes.
Nope.
And, you know, when the early part of the show, and at night, they don't have the lights shining in their
eyes. That's pretty cool. And it shines on that nice hill in the back.
Oh, I know. They thought it out. They really did. All right, buddy. Well, hey, thank you very much for taking time out of your day. As usual, it's always great hearing from you. And, folks, Night of Destruction next Saturday night. Be there or be square. By the way, how much is that race car? So Brittany knows to save her money. Do you know?
The one that Jeff's going to destroy on Saturday?
Yeah, she can buy it afterwards.
Probably really cheap after.
Okay, I'll make sure that she...
If she really wants to drive one of those cars, those guys are always selling cars and building new ones. There's a ton of them out there. I mean, you can go down the street and probably buy one for $400 or $500 and just knock the glass out of it and be ready to go.
Well, you know, we got to get her in a car. What a great... And it'd be great for the track, a little publicity, put them on TV... No, we'll have to talk about that down the track, down the road there, son.
Sounds great.
All right. Have a wonderful one. Always great talking to Scott Delosio, ParisAutoSpeedway.com. Thanks, bud.
Take care, man.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. Why? Because it's Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, welcome to the Racer Radio War.
I can't wait, Dave and I are racing each other. The Answer.
So guess what, folks? We're gonna talk to Scott, and we're gonna see if we can do a little Hell, we could do it at Barona. Don't have to drive all the way to Paris. You and I on the track. Get some cars.
But I like the slalom that one.
Well, I do too. I like the slalom.
We'll talk about it later.
Hey, who's your special guest?
Let's save time for Michael Lewis minus one. And as mentioned in the introduction, we can talk motorcycles, skateboards, which we have.
Which we have.
And then amputation, which we have, and obesity. But do you need to say your sponsors first?
And Certified Car Clinic. Looking to get your car worked on, get it dyno tuned. I don't care if it's a drag car, circle car, street car. Or a road course car. These guys will definitely show you what they've done with a dyno. So check them out. Go to CertifiedCarCare.net. CertifiedCarCare.net. So, Mike, let me ask you this. Oh, all right. What?
Well, just ask. But I want to make sure he brings up a statistic that you told me downstairs in front of the door.
All right. Well, before I
pulled
the statistics. Okay. So you were very young when you lost your leg.
Right.
Okay. You could have went one way or the other. You could have went totally negative and stayed in your room and did puzzles, or you could be energetic and exciting and go out and not be concerned about the fact that you've lost a leg. I've always felt that everything happens for a reason. Have you ever contemplated why you lost your leg at that age, and did you see any benefit from it at the age you are today?
Well, I lost my leg because I was foolish at 16. And not because I raced motorcycles, but, you know, it was the mistake that I lost my leg was as a result of my actions.
Right.
So, I can't blame anybody or anything for that.
Now, but did you see a positive from
it? Well, sure. I'm a lot lighter now.
Oh, my goodness.
And
there's that wicked sense of humor.
Yes. I only have to buy one shoe.
Stop. See, I told you.
And how many people have you motivated? Because you're still within the sport, right?
Yes. I saw him at the racetrack racing.
Well, it's a little different because I've had a couple of friends. One of them I brought with me, but I've had a couple of friends over the years that one of them happened to be a guy named Gary Chaplin. And Gary's was a professional motocross racer his life and very famous, did a lot of traveling. And a few years ago, I saw him at Gene Romero's tribute after Gene died. And Gene was a famous flat tracker.
Very famous.
And Gary said to me, he was there signing autographs, and he saw me, and he says, "Hey, are you still riding?" I said, "Yeah." And he says, "You want to go ride tomorrow?" And I said, "Yeah." And because Gary lived fairly close to me, so he said, "Let's go to a track called Cahuilla," which I'd never been to. And in fact, I really never ridden a motocross track. And so I went there with him, and we started riding every Wednesday at Kauia. Oh, nice. And one day he says, hey, I want to go this Saturday. I said, all right, let's go. So this is about my fifth, sixth time riding a motocross track. We went to Kauia, and we get there, and they said, oh, you can't ride because we're having a race today. And I said, well, wait, we drove all the way down here. I want to ride, you know. Mm-hmm. So Gary says, well, let's go ride the main track. So I went over and I said, hey, how much is it to race? And they said, $40. And I said, sign me up, you know. Mm-hmm. So I come back. I go, Gary, help me put this transponder on my bike. He goes, for what? I go, I signed up to race. He goes, you got to be kidding me. And I said, no.
Now,
he
did you have a prosthesis?
No, I don't ride with a prosthetic. No.
So you didn't have nothing?
Well, no, I had a motorcycle.
Well, I know that.
Yeah. No. So, yeah, no, I don't use a... I don't use an artificial leg.
No kidding.
I sent you the picture, Dave. I'm going to bring it up again.
So I signed up, and I had never started at a starting gate because when I quit racing, when I started racing, or when I finished racing flat track, it was all the flagmen.
Yes.
So Gary says, listen, just let everybody go. Let them go. When the gate drops, let them go, and then you go. So I did. I waited. Everybody got to the first turn. I took off. Well, I ended up getting fifth out of like 18 guys
in
the first moto.
Nice.
So the next one, I said, well, I'm not going to let him go so far this time.
Yeah, the heck with that noise.
So I ended up getting a second in the second moto.
That day? Are we talking?
Yeah. So my first motocross race and my first race in 47 years, I got a podium.
And didn't fall off this time.
No, I believe it or not, I've gone around a couple times without falling.
No, off the podium, like you're.
Oh, no. In motocross, they just hand you, you know, a little thing.
It's so the portion of leg you have left on the right, were you able to use that to kind of squish yourself into the tank?
You know, I did that for a while until I broke my hip twice. So now I don't do that anymore. And the other thing
it took twice for you to figure that out.
Well, I kind of figured it the first time and the second time, you know.
That was a confirmation.
The second time I learned that, you know, you got to keep that away from the tank and the seat. And then I was really starting to get competitive after that. Right. I mean, really getting competitive. And, you know, I did one of those 16-year-old things again, and I broke my neck.
Yeah, that was recent. Even that long ago.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. So my wife says,
years ago?
During COVID.
Ollie, did you hear that? Did you hear he broke his neck 2 years ago?
Yeah. So my wife says, you are done. You know, you're full of titanium. You're full of screws and all of this stuff. And
can't take you to the airport.
Yeah, right.
So I said, okay, I'll never race like that again.
Like that.
Oh, again. There's
Chose
the kicker.
Chose the words wisely.
So she doesn't even know I'm racing now.
She does.
What? No, she doesn't.
What do you tell her?
What do you tell her? You go to Walmart? No, she's back in 5 hours.
No, she knows I ride. She knows I ride.
Is she listening today?
No, gosh, no. I told you, I unfriended her on Facebook.
Oh.
How could you unfriend your wife?
Because I don't want her to see the trophies
comments.
And stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, where do you put them?
They're in my truck. I have a safe in my truck.
You do not.
Yes, I do. I'll show it to you.
He'll show it to you when he leaves.
I'll show it to you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Hiding evidence.
How long have you been married?
35 years.
She knows.
I told you, we've only had one fight. Just hasn't ended yet.
Yeah. She knows. God. I will bet you a beer she knows.
No, she knows. I'm just kidding. No,
she's
just, knows.
Yeah, she knows.
She just won't bring it up. She's, you know.
Just like, smart.
You know, there are things that, you know, in marriage that you never ask. How many motorcycles your husband has? You don't ask that.
Ignorance is bliss. You know?
Go ahead.
No, did you have more to say? On this?
Well, he's got 5 hours.
I didn't
hours.
Know if you wanted... I know this is not long enough. Did you want to go the route of the statistic you told me? But I was just having so much fun.
We can.
Is it positive?
It's educational.
Yes and no. I mean, I get messages all the time from people that are challenged, mm-hmm. whether it be because they're amputees or because they're fighting cancer. And I get involved in a lot of causes, and I do try to help anywhere that I can. But I get a lot of messages from people that... are about to lose a limb or have lost a limb and are really struggling with life. Right. And they see a picture or something. And then they tell me, you know, in fact, I had a guy that got a hold of me. He was crying and he says, hey, they're going to take my leg off. I was going to commit suicide. He goes, I really was going to commit suicide. And I saw this picture of you flying through the air, you know, like 10 feet off the ground on a motorcycle with no leg. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can still do what I wanted to do, you know? Right. Yeah. So there's been a lot of that. And if I start to talk to these people and try to get them to realize that life doesn't end just because you're missing a tool, you can still complete the job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I started to look into amputation, and I noticed that 70% of the population is overweight. 40% are obese. And one of the biggest numbers or reasons people get amputations is for type 2 diabetes.
Right.
So if you're not happy where you're at, and I wasn't before I started racing again, I was almost 200 pounds.
What?
With one leg.
How long ago is this?
4 years ago.
What?
I had been taking pain pills the doctor gave me, you know. I'm not blaming the doctor.
No, but then that put all the weight on.
I started taking pain pills, and pretty soon I was taking gabapentin for phantom pain, and I was taking this, and I'd taken that. So one day I said, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be a clock watcher. I don't want to have all these.
You want to write all this crap down.
So I quit taking all pain pills. I started to work out in the gym, and when I first went to the gym, I couldn't even swim one lap in the pool. I couldn't swim one lap. But the second
he did, but he kept going in circles.
Yeah.
Because he only had one leg.
So then I went and got a
flip. Lord have mercy on David's soul. Sorry for that, Michael.
That's okay.
Circle.
That's okay. So I ended up getting a swim fin, and then I got to the point where I could swim.
Well, then you definitely can't go straight if you got a swim fin.
David?
Yeah. So now I can swim 80 laps in an hour.
Jeez.
What?
I ride 30 miles on the bike every other day.
For our listeners who can't see you, you said you were 200 pounds. And what are you now?
About 135.
Yeah.
135.
Yeah.
Because remember, I'm missing my right leg.
Remember, 75%.
Yeah, and that's another 100 pounds right
there. That's right. So
you must change your diet.
I did. I completely eliminated all processed sugar. And that was the biggest thing. As soon as I eliminated the processed sugar from my diet, I lost over 50 pounds in 90 days.
90 days?
Yeah. Man. But you know what? I know lots of people that have been heavy and then lost weight, and they look terrible. And it's not because I want to date you, but you look phenomenal. I mean, you don't look like you lost 50 pounds.
No, you don't.
I lost over 50
pounds. Well, I know, but I'm just saying, and I say that in a positive way for people to realize you can do this and be healthy and happy.
Do it the right way.
And you know what? You are coming to KUSI TV. I don't care where you live, because you'll be such an inspirational story. We'll bring your bike, put you in your gear.
He's coming back with Gail Webb for Yak Radio soon, too.
We're going to get him on TV. I mean, come on. Right? Don't you think so?
I know that he's amazing.
I think we're
going to
make that happen. My secretary will take care of it. Dear, take care of it. Racer Radio. Oh, Gun Owners Radio, right around the corner. Don't go nowhere. This is FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.